We open the phone lines in this next hour of Midday to hear from our listeners. Tell us what's on your mind. Perhaps you're thinking about the events in Ferguson, Missouri, or more generally about the state of relations between police and citizens. This is an opportunity to air your views and hear those of others. A new casino is about to open in Baltimore. We can talk about that. In Ocean City, some year-round residents are expressing some rage against short-term renters. Open phones, some email, and follow up on previous shows. That's coming up on Midday after the news from NPR. Welcome back to Midday, our second hour. It's Open Phones Thursday here on WYPR on the Midday Show. So give me a call if there's something on your mind you want to share, either following up from the previous hour or previous hours, any earlier show that you wanted to comment on, we could do that. We also have some emails from previous shows that I want to share with you, some comments from listeners about our discussions yesterday with David Zerwick on Ferguson, Missouri, the news coverage there and the treatment of the news media by the police in Ferguson, Missouri. We have that. We have some emails to catch up on regarding the University of Maryland's athletic team's move into the Big Ten Conference, leaving the ACC and going into the Big Ten. And then we have some news items to discuss, confrontations with the police, very much on people's minds because of Ferguson, but also a couple of incidents here in Baltimore City. That have sparked people to comment by email, emails to me. Also have the story of James Foley, the photojournalist from the United States, the American 40-year-old American photojournalist who was executed by ISIS, decapitated him by a terrorist in somewhere in the Middle East, a member of the ISIS group, the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria. And we're finding out that ISIS had made demands for a multi-million dollar ransom for Foley's release. We also find out that an effort was made to rescue him by our government, by our special forces. So there's a couple of news stories that we may want to comment on. Here at home, we have a casino opening in Baltimore City scheduled to open next Tuesday, the Horseshoe Casino in Baltimore. And then a story related to that. The Board of Estimates in Baltimore City yesterday, without discussion, voting to divert $3 million in anticipated casino revenue, money that's supposed to go into community improvements, actually going to improve the underground steam pipe system around the Horseshoe Casino down on Russell Street so that it can open on time on Tuesday. The mayor of Baltimore, Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake, she controls three of the five votes on the Board of Estimates. She's defending this decision to divert this money, and that's caused some criticism. Some people think that money shouldn't, the money that's earmarked or supposed to be going to community improvement in that area of town should not be going to help the casino get online with some $3 million for infrastructure. Probably the casino operators could afford that, is the point being made there. And that story. And then I was also interested in Ocean City, the story that we had in the Sun over the weekend or late last week and over the weekend and into this week about problems with renters and an effort to the idea down there to limit or to ban week-long rentals in Ocean City. Some residents have called for a ban of weekly rentals in single-family neighborhoods because they say there's too much the renters make too much noise, cause too many problems down there. A lot of folks lined up to testify about this in Ocean City this past week. No decision was made on that. I guess they're going to come back to that subject after Labor Day. But you may want to comment on that, too, the rage against renters in Ocean City. This is how you reach us on Midday to talk about any of these subjects that I mentioned or to follow up on earlier subjects. 410-662-8780. The toll-free long-distance number, which is good from Ocean City, 866-661-9309. And our email address is midday at WYPR.org. I want to follow up here with by taking a call from Annie Applegarth. Annie Applegarth is Director of Facilities for the Baltimore Office of Promotion and the Arts. And I think it was only last week we had open phone lines, and one of our listeners called in wondering when the Bromo Seltzer Tower clock was going to start working again. This is the Bromo Seltzer Arts Tower. And there's that old clock up there, right? And so I couldn't answer the question, but I think Annie Applegarth can. So, Annie, hello. Welcome to the midday. Annie, you there? Annie Applegarth.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Great.
So tell us, what's the story with the clock at the Bromo Seltzer Tower?
Well, the Bromo Seltzer Tower, as you all know, is an icon of Baltimore City. And several years back, it was owned by the city, and it was basically vacant. And Eddie and Sylvia Brown, along with the Baltimore Office of Promotion and Arts, brought it back in phase one. So inside, we have artist studio space and gallery space that can be used. And it's also the cornerstone for the arts and entertainment district there. But now we are approaching doing the exterior renovations as well as a restoration of the clock. And what has happened with that beautiful old clock is somewhere in the 60s or 70s, somebody decided to put a small electric motor on the clock, which seems so modern at the time and very fabulous. What has happened is in order for a gravity-driven clock to run by motor, it really turns all the gears in the opposite direction. So in the long run, it has been working to damage the clock.
Hmm.
More recently, the motor stopped. And we all took a big vote because we're approaching some phase two renovations, the exterior of the building and the clock. Do you want to put money into restoring a motor, or do you want to put money into a greater project and restore it to its original gravity-driven mechanism? All hands went up. Here we are in Baltimore for the historic restoration. So we've got a lot of parties that are involved in raising the money to make this happen. The mayor is certainly behind us on this, and the city of Baltimore. Even as close as the elections in November, she supported a geo bond that you can vote on if you're a city resident so that we can gain some money to start this restoration, which, all fingers crossed, we would hope would start sometime in 2015.
How much do you need to do this,
Annie? $1.8
million. $1.8 million. What is a geo bond?
A geo bond is oftentimes when you go to the polls, you see a list of bonds, whether you would like certain funding from the city to go to various projects.
Yeah, but I've never heard it referred to as a geo bond.
Sorry. Oh, that could be my own term.
Yeah.
I believe that's what it is.
But we get to vote on this in the general election in November.
That's correct.
Huh.
And,
is it for all $1.8 million or part
no,
of it?
No, just for a portion of it. We'll be collecting a variety, looking for a variety of sources through a capital campaign, which is being run through the Baltimore Office of Promotion and Arts.
So restore it to its historic best and get it ticking again.
Mm-hmm.
That's the idea.
And
okay.
And just a couple of notes is that the clock is a foot bigger than the clock at Westminster, where the face is, which we all refer to as Big Ben. And it will run with the accuracy of Big Ben once it's taken back to the gravity-driven mechanism.
One last thing, Annie. In the meantime, there are no plans to do some sort of fix so that it can function again. We're pretty much going to wait.
I'm going to add in one quick thing, a little plug for the tower. The clock tower is open for tours on Fridays and Saturdays. And you can go in for $5 and take a historic tour of the building, or for free and go visit the artists and artist studios that are working in the space every Friday, every Saturday.
Friday from 1 to 7?
That's correct.
Okay. And Saturday, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m.?
That's correct.
All right. Well, Annie Applegarth, thank you very much.
Thank you, and come visit me. I'll give you a tour.
Okay. Thanks, Annie.
Take care.
Yep. Nice
Bye-bye.
To see you today. What was I going to say? There's a little bit of follow-up to our conversation last week about the Bromo Seltzer Tower clock. So vote for the bond issue if you want to see it ticking again and restored to its historic best. Another follow-up here. when did we do this? This was late July, early August. We had an hour here discussing my idea of a crab harvest moratorium in the Chesapeake Bay, you know, because of the declining numbers of crabs and the concern expressed by scientists that the number of female crabs in particular has fallen below the level needed to sustain the overall population of crabs in the Chesapeake Bay, the blue crabs. So we had a discussion here a few weeks ago about the moratorium, and Brenda Davis, who runs the Blue Crab Program, she's manager of it for the state of Maryland, was here and explained why a moratorium of 1 year or 2 years would not gain us very much in terms of crab numbers. And she gave the biological explanation for why this wouldn't work, why there was a flaw in the analogy between a moratorium on the crab harvest and the moratorium we had in the 1980s on the harvest of rockfish, and why it was a poor analogy. If you want to read more about this, I followed up on this. I said, I'd like to see this in print. I heard you. We had the conversation on the air. I listened to it like everyone else, and I think I absorbed it and understood it. And I just wanted to see it in print. So I submitted questions to Brenda Davis, who gave them to her husband, Glenn Davis, who also works for the crab program in the Chesapeake Bay. And so now the long story short is it's published in my column today in The Sun. It's posted on my Facebook page. If you want to follow up and make sure you understand that a little bit better, there's some you can read that. 410-662-8780 is our phone number here. Open phone lines to talk about what you like to talk about. I'm going to read some emails when we get back after this short break. We'll take a break here. And if you want to phone in, again, the number 410-662-8780. This is Dan Rodericks on Midday. Welcome back. 410-662-8780 is our number here. Is anybody else upset about the I'm not sure how upset I am about this. The city diverting $3 million in casino impact funds. The idea here was that a certain amount of a revenue generated by the new casino in Baltimore would go to the neighborhoods around that casino. The president of the Westport Community Association saying that the vote by the Board of Estimates to divert $3 million away from this use to fix an underground steam pipe system so the casino can open on time is just plain wrong. The Sun had an editorial called Getting Steamed about this, saying that the city should find another way or the casino should find another way to finance that repair, not by taking money that's supposed to be set aside for community improvement. Ralph, writing in on this subject, says, diverting funds from neighborhoods is already done too often in our town. Why is it assumed they can always take from the community? We need to find funding in places other than those that impact our communities, especially programs for children. We need to get our priorities straight and keep our eye on the kids. The casino, a big playpen for adults, can take care of itself. Our children are playing in the streets. And another thing is $3 million to who runs this casino? Is this a Caesars casino, the Horseshoe? I'm pretty sure it's Caesars. What are they doing hitting on the city for another $3 million for a repair for an underground pipe? Come on, fix it yourself. Fix it yourself. You're going to make plenty of money down there. Listen, got a lot of emails here off of yesterday's show with David Zurawick. We always do. David was here, the Baltimore Sun media critic, talking about news coverage of Ferguson, Missouri, and the way the Ferguson, Missouri police have treated the reporters down there. And several comments here about the media. And one of the topics we got onto yesterday was the police showing disrespect for the media and, in fact, pointing guns at the media, handcuffing some reporters. Is that reflective of the way the country at large feels about the press these days, the media? On journalism, Preston wrote in to say, I think the media shot itself in the foot when it tried to branch into entertainment. People don't take it seriously like they did when I was young. And then you have someone like James Foley who brings it all home. He gave his life for his profession. But when you have obvious phonies like Limbaugh out there, only in it for the money, it brings the whole profession down. We need the fifth column. Another comment on this about Fox News and Fox Media, Fox News coverage of Ferguson, specifically from Tivis, who said the hypocrisy at Fox about Ferguson, they put themselves right in the middle of the Cleveland Bundy situation. They called the militia and gun rights people patriots when they got involved, and Sean Hannity was in the middle of that and also took a trip to see Rick Perry at the border with Mexico, putting himself in the middle of that situation. So what is the difference between that and, say, Jake Tapper making comments about the presence of the police in Ferguson? Dan, geez, it's all about the ratings these days. Y'all knew that, writes Bud. He said, I have switched to watching and listening to BBC America nowadays because the lamestream media is possibly 5 minutes of news, and then it goes to sensationalism, just a talent entertainment reality show looking for ratings. Yeah. I mean, when you say the media, I think we ought to talk about television there. I think that's what you're referring to is television news, television media. But Stan wrote in to stand up for Fox. You know, I don't. David comes in here sometimes, and he actually says complimentary things about Fox News, which gets a lot of people upset on the other side. So I just wanted to tell Stan that. Anyway, this is what Stan had to say. I find it less than amusing that you and your guest, David Zerwick, denigrate Fox News as a questionable news outlet. I don't remember specifically. Did I do that yesterday? I just don't remember doing that. But anyway, while Fox's hard news programs go after the Department of Justice for Fast and Furious, or the State Department over the Benghazi cover-up, the IRS's targeting of conservative organizations, your favorite real news outlets were and remain practically silent. Okay, I'm going to stop there and just say, are you telling me CBS, NBC, ABC, NPR have not covered those stories or didn't cover those stories? Anyway, I'll continue on here. I suspect the only personal knowledge you have of the Fox lineup consists of mangled clips of commentator Bill O'Reilly or rants from partisans like Hannity. I'll give you that. That's probably true. But to ignore the excellent contributions of serious Fox journalists like James Rosen, Brett Baer, Megyn Kelly, Greta Van Susteren, and commentators like Charles Krauthammer, Kirsten Powers, and George Will shows at best an ignorance of the Fox lineup or at worst a liberal bias on your part. For every Hannity and O'Reilly at Fox, there is a disproportionate number of Schultzes, Maddows, Bashirs, and Obermans at the others. Oberman? What happened to Keith Olbermann? He's doing sports again, isn't he? Okay. You seem willing to give the real news outlets, biased hacks, a pass as not being representative of their fine reporting. Why? This is what I want to say about this. Actually, I watch the Shepard Smith news sometimes on Fox News. It's pretty straightforward. I think it's pretty good. It's all the other stuff that I'm talking about, and I don't give MSNBC a pass either on this. But when I talk about the iron core of journalism that I mentioned yesterday, I am talking about the network news operations. I'm talking about NPR, BBC. I'm talking about the New York Times, Washington Post, what remains of our national newspapers and strong regional newspapers. And we never seem to talk about newspapers here very much. Yet millions of people go to newspaper websites to get news, to get that news that comes from the iron core of journalism or what remains of it. It's all this other stuff, though, that where people get their impressions and affirm their belief that there's all this bias in the news, either bias on the right or bias on the left. And I agree with the earlier email about it being for entertainment's sake, because that's primarily what it is, a little bit of information with a lot of entertainment. Anyway, so thank you for those comments. Our midday email address is midday@wypr.org. The phone number here, open phone lines here on midday, 410-662-8780. Another subject. Do you think it's a good idea for police to videotape demonstrations, protests in the streets of Baltimore or any city? There's a very interesting editorial in my own newspaper today on this called The Virtue of Video. Police use of video cameras, even to record public events like a demonstration at City Hall to support the protesters in Ferguson, Missouri, can make everyone safer. Now, the ACLU expressed fears that videotaping is aimed at intimidating peaceful demonstrators, dissuading people from exercising their constitutional rights to go out in the street and protest or demonstrate. The Baltimore police do this, though. They say it's part of their training. Both the police and the demonstrators have a huge stake in ensuring that an event like this remains nonviolent. And to that end, the presence of cameras in the hands of both the police and those participating in demonstrations, because it works both ways, right, is likely to overall make the event safer for everyone. The ability to record the behavior of people at large public events isn't a one-way street. Maryland courts have repeatedly upheld the right of people to videotape interactions between police and members of the public. In one case, a Harford County judge threw out wiretapping charges against a motorcyclist who secretly videotaped his own traffic stop. That was a few years ago. And in another, a Baltimore City police officer was fired after being caught on tape berating a teenage skateboarder at the Inner Harbor. Remember that? So I had to read this very interesting editorial about the virtues of videotaping these situations, because now you have a record of what's going on there. Are we better off with that? I wonder what you think about that. 410-662-8780. I had some more comments about police behavior, confrontations with the police in the United States. A lot of folks are talking about that because of the events in Ferguson this past week, past 10 or 12 days now. And got some interesting emails to read on this. One is from Beth, who said, I have experienced harassment from the state police in New Jersey. Years ago, as a young white mother with two small children in the car, I was stopped for speeding. I was going 61 in a 55-mile-per-hour zone on I-95. So, yeah, I was speeding. But I was in the slow lane with cars zipping by me at much faster speeds. I asked why the officer picked me, the slowest of the drivers, and he said, you look like you could afford it. I was driving a used Audi at the time. That said, I am much more concerned for my future grandchildren who will be of mixed race. I see the differences in treatment. And here's a quote sent in by, who sent this in? Catherine. A quote from Battlestar Galactica. She said, this is the quote. There's a reason you separate military and the police. One fights the enemies of the state. The other serves and protects the people. When the military becomes both, then the enemies of the state tend to become the people. Please address the military equipment being given to local police departments by the federal government, by the Defense Department, Department of Homeland Security. Thank you for that. Actually, that's from Katie. Did I say that? Yeah, it was from Katie. And another quote came in from, who offered this? Tim. He offered this quote from a political scientist named Lawrence Britt, Dr. Lawrence Britt. Under fascist regimes, the police are given almost limitless power to enforce laws. The people are often willing to overlook police abuses and even forego civil liberties in the name of patriotism. There is often a national police force with virtually unlimited power in fascist nations. Thank you for offering that. We're going to go to the phone lines here as soon as I put on my eyeglasses to see who's calling. Maya. Well, Maya, nice to hear from you. Thank you for calling. Hey. Midday. Open phones here. Hi.
Yes. I think what's needed in Ferguson is a truth and reconciliation process like they had in South Africa at the end of apartheid. The reason I say that is people are claiming that there's been years of harassment by one race against another, and I think that would really help the process. That would give people a voice instead of having to be in the streets throwing things.
Yeah, you need something like that. I like your idea very much. It's kind of hard to, the New York Times has a piece today about, or was it yesterday, about who's in charge, who's leading who here. So who actually would take part in those negotiations is a question. How much control has the mayor had over this, the mayor of Ferguson, versus the police chief? and, you know, the governor calling in the highway patrol, and yet the police department in Ferguson still doing its own thing. On, I think the day that the highway patrol chief was brought in to mitigate here, to take charge, that's the day that the police decided to release the video, which further incited the situation. So you might be right. Of course, you had the Attorney General Eric Holder down there yesterday. So you might be right. You might need a commission like that, or some other separate body to come in and to settle this thing.
Yes, I think it speaks to our country's attitudes around and philosophy about how to solve problems. Yeah. There's too much of the idea of forcing things rather than reconciliation.
Yeah, and too much escalation, I would say. I think a lot of people have this concern just by the look, the images presented by the police, the use of the positioning of themselves with weapons and the equipment that they were wearing, all of that gave a lot of people shudders this week. Back on the subject of childcare, what we covered in the earlier hour, is a comment from Bill in Arnold. By the way, if you want to follow up on the previous conversation of childcare, we had a lot of folks who wanted to talk about that. We can take calls on that during this hour as well. 410-662-8780. Bill says, I couldn't agree more with your guest that we really need to look at ourselves for the reason we don't have better childcare in the United States. We are far behind almost all of the world's developed countries in every progressive program that makes life livable. A recent study by Baylor University showed that people who live in the dreaded socialist democracies of Europe are much more content with their lives than our Americans. And it's just not childcare, it's jobs programs, education, and infrastructure. I'll throw in healthcare, too. And it's all because we, the people, keep voting for those who hold what is falsely called conservative ideology, which is really much more the fear of losing what you have if someone else is allowed to get ahead. We must stop voting for conservatives if we are ever to get out of the doldrums of fear-based living and progress to creativity-based living. That's from Bill in Arnold. Midday at WYPR.org is the email address here if you want to share comments with us that way. I'm going to take another break here. When we get back, I hope we get some phone calls. It's open phone lines, whatever's on your mind on this summer day. I have some more emails to read. A couple of news stories to share with you. And what's with Ocean City? What's going on down there? The people who live there all year, many of them retired, don't like the noise coming from some rental properties, so they want to, in certain areas of Ocean City, want to ban week-long rentals, make you rent for 4 months in order to do it. 410-662-8780. Short break on Midday. We'll be right back. The term geobond was used earlier, and I bet you the younger folks sitting in the control room thought it was geo, like G-E-O bond. It's G-O, as in government obligation bond versus a revenue bond. And I want to thank Ann Jones for writing in to point this out for us. A G-O bond, it's a government obligation bond, is against the full faith and credit of the city, as opposed to a revenue bond, which is paid back from the revenues of a facility like a parking garage or a sanitary commission. You know, so thank you very much for clarifying that. So when you vote for, if you vote for the Bromo Seltzer Tower upgrade, the clock upgrade, it'll be a GO bond. Okay. 410-662-8780. Open phones Thursday on Midday. Randy's in. Is he in Ocean City or calling about Ocean City? Hi, Randy.
I'm in Ocean City now.
You're in Ocean City now. How you doing?
Pretty good. Pretty good.
Are you a renter or an owner of property?
I've been an owner for property for years in around Ocean City for the last 20 years.
Okay. So help us out here. This story sort of popped up on all of us last week sometime, and trying to understand it a little bit better. I understand that people have complaints about renters, especially what, high school, college kids who come down there for a week.
Oh, with the college kids and the renters, I don't have too much to say about that. I was calling on more about the government aggression with the police against, people from out of state coming in. And
oh, okay. I thought you were talking about the rentals. Okay.
Well,
what'd you want to say about this, Randy?
Well, what goes on down here is a lot of profiling, and that if it was more minority in Ocean City, there probably been more riots than out in Missouri right now.
Hmm.
I film cops for Cop Block and 2 Million Bikers at D.C., the website. And some of the stuff you see, just on 113 on Sunday, I filmed three officers, and I was following a black gentleman down the road, and they pulled beside him and profiled him, pulled him over, beautiful trailer, beautiful truck, and they went up to him. I was the one doing over the speed limit. He wasn't. He got pulled over. I stopped up the road. I glassed the place for a while with my binoculars, watched them. They were pulling the dog in, doing all this, you know, stuff. Went up to the man, started filming it, and the cops got all nervous, wouldn't give me their names, which is federal law. They have to give their names, refuse to give the names. Then one of their supervisors there come up with new rules saying you have to be back 75 feet, which I had to explain to him he doesn't know the law at all. But that's what goes on. But then when you take a case to court, the judges always rule with the police in Ocean City.
All right, Randy. I just want to slow you down for a minute. I want to go over a couple things with you, okay? You say you film. What do you do?
I film. I take my cell phone and I film them for Cop Block, COP Block. That's a website you can go to.
Okay, what is Cop Block?
It's an organization now that's getting nationwide attention. Even for Fox News had Cop Block on there with the O'Reilly was getting upset about it. It's showing all the instances with people that are taking pictures of cops now. They're putting it on a website.
Okay, what motivates you to do this? Why do you do this?
Retired, tired of hearing cops, you know, doing, you know, going places and bragging about their kills, you know, how many tickets they gave, taking the rights, government aggression against American citizens.
Okay.
Is the bottom line.
Now, when you talk about profiling, so are you concerned as a citizen in Ocean City that the Ocean City police engage in what, racial profiling?
Oh, absolutely. You should have came down a couple months ago. Every minority was pulled over. Most of the time you see the minorities pulled over in Ocean City. 113's like the Hoochie Men Trail. You're going to get hit.
So you actually track this in your car with your cell phone?
Oh, yeah. I watch. You know, I'm always on the road. I've been retired since I've been 47. And I'm on the road all the time and seeing and just watching the profiling. But when they pull them over, how they illegally bring the dogs in, and then if they do bust someone out of one out of 500 vehicles, they harass, strip their vehicles down, they find a little bit of dope, they go into court, they always have it in the paper. This is a steady routine. They always say that there was an anonymous tip. They didn't want to say they deprived the man of his rights and illegally searched his car, said he smelled something. My dog's taking a hit on your car, but there's been federal laws changed that. If a cop taps on the side of his car and tries to encourage his dog if he's being filmed, they won't do it. Hmm. But a dog is not allowed to go in the vehicle anymore.
Let me ask you this, Randy. What happens when you approach the scenes that where the police have pulled somebody over and you're standing there taking a picture? Do they object to that?
Oh, absolutely, all the time. Or they just shut down what they're doing like they did to the black man that I was filming, and they had a warning written out for him, but the dog was coming behind him. And they were bringing the dog in for a search, and he was only pulled over for like 4 minutes. I pulled up ahead and started watching what was going on. And I saw the dog get out, and as soon as I came with the camera, the guy took the dog back to the car. The other officer was in a SWAT uniform, all black, you know, like the KGB. The only thing that officer and the police in Maryland don't have on their uniforms anymore is a swastika.
Okay.
So they do everything to deprive people of their rights. They were going to put a dog in. They were, you know, the guy had a beautiful trailer. He was wearing a beautiful Rolex with a pearl Rolex.
Randy, I'm interested in what you do. You sort of do this as a hobby, and now it sounds like it's become
a sport.
A sport? I don't know if it's a sport, but I mean, had you been concerned about this before Cop Block existed or before cell phone cameras existed?
Well, before you couldn't prove anything without the cell phone world.
True.
You couldn't prove anything, and now people are seeing the aggression from the police. I don't know what the mindset is of police, but if the more and more you hear about the studies, they're not allowed to give evaluations.
Right.
Maryland, on the Eastern Shore, they will not give their police a polygraph test.
Hey, Randy, would you do me a favor? I don't know. I'd like to talk to this guy off the air, so maybe
Could you get his phone number? Randy, if you don't mind, give your phone number to one of our producers. I'm going
to
take
it. I'll give it to him anytime.
Yeah,
I'll
thanks.
Sit down. I could show him paperwork. I wrote the.
All right. Let's put Randy on. Let's put Randy on hold, and I'll follow up with him. I got to take another call. Randy, thank you for that. Interesting. Lloyd, calling to join us here on Midday. Hi.
How are you?
Okay, Lloyd, what did you want to say today?
Well, basically, you know, I've been following what's happening in Vert Ferguson somewhat, and it's from what I can see, with, you know, the violence that's happening, like, I definitely don't agree that that's the best way to solve any type of problem. But it seems to me that it's the issue is a lot less about this one specific issue or shooting, but more about the consensus within the Black community that the lives of Blacks and minorities are not as important as their white counterparts. And the feeling is that, you know, had this been a white person, that the cop might have taken or given that person an extra opportunity or might not have shot and killed that person.
Mm. Yeah, I understand. I understand that that's the nature of the complaint there, why people have risen up and taken to the streets to demonstrate. Thank you very much for that call. Another call. Is it Ann? Yeah, I'm sorry. I got to get my glasses on to see that. Hi, Ann. Welcome to the show. Thank you.
Hi. I just want to make a couple quick comments. One thing that disturbs me is that I hear a lot of people justifying the shooting of the young man because of this film of him supposedly stealing something. And to me, it doesn't matter what you've done unless the officer really is in danger. I don't care if the person's shoplifted or what. They don't deserve to be killed. It's like saying a woman deserves to be raped because she's walking around naked. I mean, it's just...
Well, who do you hear? I'm curious. Who do you hear saying that? Did you switch to a AM talk show or something?
No, I heard it on NPR today. Diane Reams' show talked all about this, and a caller called up basically saying, you know, that this young man, you know, is a thief and all of that, and it's not like he's a clean angel or anything. And I just find that so disturbing. The police have to be held to a higher standard and not become the judge and the jury. I understand that their lives are often in danger. And I want to make another comment. I work with men. I work construction, and I have seen the cops harass my Black coworkers and never harass my white coworkers, my male coworkers. And, I mean, it's just unbelievable on a regular basis. And I could go on, having lived in Southwest Baltimore for years and witnessed so much police harassment, more towards people of color and then secondarily class. So color seems to come first in our society by gradations of harassment and then class by gradations of harassment. So the lower economic group that you belong to, the more you get harassed, and the darker your skin, the more you get harassed, and the darker your skin comes first, as this gentleman just said before in what he witnessed. And I could go into some details about stuff that I'd rather not do on the air, but there are corrupt officers out there ruining the lives of a lot of young Black men in the most horrendous, horrendous ways.
Well, let me ask you something. You made a reference to the city. You saw this in a city neighborhood?
Absolutely.
And when did you see this? What
on a regular basis? I lived in Southwest Baltimore for 20 years. Mm-hmm. I could count literally dozens and dozens of times that I witnessed this, and I myself, because I am a white woman living in a low-income community, have been stopped by the police and asked what I'm doing there because it's inappropriate for me to be in this mixed low-income community.
And you live there.
And I live there. I don't live there at present, but I own a house there. And my point is that we don't get it. People who are white and live in the suburbs and all of that, really, unless they experience it themselves, they really don't seem to understand how profound this is. And they group all people together as every Black person is a criminal. I mean, it's so incredibly offensive.
The only reason I ask you about when this was is because there are different periods of time under different mayors and different police commissioners when that would come and go, especially during the O'Malley administration from 99 to 2006, we had, you know, arrest fest in Baltimore, 100,000 people arrested in a single year, and people stopped on the street for, you know, All kinds of things.
It's happening still, and it never slowed down or stopped.
All right.
In those communities.
Yeah. Ann, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Let's go back to the phones again. Take another call. This is John. John, thank you for calling Midday. Hi. John? Yeah, go right ahead, John.
All right, yes, hi. I support what both the woman just before me and Randy were saying.
Hold on a second. Something just happened there. Is John gone? Was that on John's line? Oh, well, that's unfortunate. John, try calling back. Julie. I'll go to Julie next. Hi.
Hi. I was going to say something else, but I was just listening to Anne's comment, and I absolutely agree with everything she just said. I know, for example, right now I live in North Baltimore. I know that white students going to, say, Towson University can do things. I mean, they can sit on the lawn, have a huge party, be drunk, smoke weed, congregate, you know, 50 of them at a time. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, but I'm saying if you took those same students and if they were black, there is no way that would be allowed to happen. So I do think it's a very different world, not being a person of color versus being a person of color in your relationship to the police. I, as a white woman, could sit on my front porch and smoke a joint, and nothing would happen to me. I could crack a beer, absolutely nothing. But if I was a black man doing the same thing, I know that I would be subject to questioning at the very least, and arrest, and possibly even brutality, as we see over and over again.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for that call, Julie. 410-662-8780. Did we hear back from John? That's all right. Well, maybe he'll call back in here. I had a couple other emails I wanted to read on a different subject, following up, because I like to follow up on our earlier discussions on Midday. We talked the other day with Milton Kent, sports at large commentator, about the University of Maryland's decision to leave the Atlantic Coast Conference, the ACC, and go into the Big Ten with football and basketball and all that. And the Big Ten, in the Big Ten, Maryland will be playing teams like Michigan State and Wisconsin, for instance. Tony says, I am a Wisconsin Badger. And do not accept this, that the University of Maryland has moved into the Big Ten. Even though I live in Baltimore City, I refuse to attend any games in College Park when the Wisconsin Badgers are there. I think it is clear that TV and money rule over the fans and the students. When I lived in Madison, I used to think a six-hour road trip to see another team was too much. That was in the Big Ten in the Midwest geographically. Now you have to travel for a full day by car or fly to see the Badgers play in College Park. It's ridiculous. I'm boycotting. Nicole says, as a Duke alumnus, I was initially disappointed to hear that Maryland, a founding member of the ACC, was leaving the conference. Now I'm kind of glad because we can finally put to rest this notion that Terrapin fans have that we were actually rivals. The Tar Heels are our only rival, she says. And one last comment on this subject. This is from Nancy, who says, this is a comment about the Under Armour uniforms that the University of Maryland football team wears. My Michigan alum husband likes to say of the Maryland football program, we went to a football game and a fashion show broke out. If you've ever been to Byrd Stadium, when the Hokies or Florida State came to visit, yeah, the stadium will be filled with opponents from the Big Ten, whatever you want to call it, conference. They can't count because the Big Ten actually is more than 10 teams. Thank you for those comments. Back to the phone lines. Did John call back? Oh, very good. I'm glad you prevailed in getting through again, John. What did you want? You called about Randy and his call from Ocean City, right?
Yes, I did. Do you hear me?
Yeah, go right ahead.
Okay. I have, and also with the woman from Southwest Baltimore, I mean, the Baltimore police can be bad too, but urban police, in my experience, are far better than rural police or small town police or resort police. And my best friend is a lawyer in Ocean City who defends these people. And he said, if you get stopped by the cops for whatever reason, profiling, you know, legitimately, whatever, you're looking at probably $2,000 to more likely $2,500 to get off, even if you're innocent. And he said there are tons of innocent people who get pulled over. is one extreme example. He had a client who was a young woman who was pulled over. They suspected her of she wasn't speeding, but they, you know, tried to say she was drinking. They gave her the breathalyzer. She said, "Sure, I'll take it." She said, "Because I don't drink." She blew zero on the test, and they said they thought their thing was not working properly because she had left the bar. But she said, "No, I can't. Not only I don't drink, but I can't. I'm allergic to alcohol." Well, they didn't believe her. Because it was a weekend night, they took her down to the Ocean City Jail because she couldn't see a judge or whatever. She spent the night in jail. Now, this is somebody who can't drink alcohol, and it cost her $2,500 to get off. And one more quick thing. A friend of mine who was the former president of the Board of Realtors in Ocean City left Ocean City to move back up to Baltimore because of the police situation down there.
Because of the police situation, what happened to them, to him or her?
He said it's like Randy was saying, it's a police state. If you go out on the road, you know, remember, this is a town that funds its police force and part of its government with fines that it can collect from, you know, from tourists.
Yeah.
When they pull them over. And it's so out of control, according to my lawyer friend and other friends that live down there, that it's just that the president of the Board of Realtors told me that was his primary reason for leaving. And
I mean,
it's just they pull you over.
Was he your friend from who served as president of the Board of Realtors? Was he ever harassed personally by the police?
He had been stopped, I think. But I mean, he's a white, you know, upper middle class businessman. And it's just you're people who live down there are afraid when they get in their car of the police.
John, your other friend who's a lawyer represented people, white, black people, or mostly African Americans, or
all of the above. But and he says definitely minorities are targeted more than whites. In the case of the woman who was pulled over, who was allergic to alcohol and still spent a night in jail, she was a young white college student, female, you know.
We had a litigation over racial profiling by the state police in Maryland some years ago.
Right.
Other ongoing cases like that, usually brought by the ACLU. I wonder if they've ever, if anyone in Ocean City's ever drawn their attention there.
I don't know. I mean, if you'd like off the air, I could give you my friend the attorney's number if you want to follow up a little bit.
Yeah, I do. Some fruit falls off of this tree here when I do this radio show that sometimes gets me a story for the Sun. So
It's really bad down there. It's really bad. I mean, in the winter, they have basically one cop for every, I forget if it's every block or two blocks in Ocean City for the winter. Remember, the streets are only, not blocks, I mean streets, like 41st Street, 42nd Street.
Right, right.
You know, and they're only like three or four blocks long.
Hey, John, we got to go. Why don't you stay on the line and give me your phone number off the line, off the air.
Will do.
Yeah.
Will do. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, appreciate you calling. Curious. Interesting. Open phone lines. You never know what's going to come through here, do you? Anyway, I hope you enjoyed the show this afternoon and our conversation about childcare in the first hour and in this hour. So please join us again midday Friday tomorrow. What do we have on the show? Oh, Preservation Maryland with Endangered Maryland, our annual look at interesting buildings with historic significance that are threatened with being lost forever. And also volunteering in retirement, the virtues of doing that. That's on midday Friday. I'll see you then.
Midday Senior Producer is Nikki Gamer. The Associate Producer, Michael Hemowitz. Our engineers are Matt Taka and Luke Spicknell. Our interns are Connor Graham and Marjorie Goodman. Music produced by Jeff Truman and High Gravity Sounds. Midday podcast and live streaming available at WIPR.org. Dan Roderick's column appears in the Baltimore Sun. This is WIPR, your NPR news station.